Hour two kicks off in the Truly Hard Seltzer studios of Fan Run Radio. Davey, you mentioned this during the break. We've been talking about some of the quick hitters in the NFL. Is this real talk, the Tom Brady to the Titans? Stephen A. Smith has been like all over this, and then there's a lot of people saying, oh, Giselle would never move to Nashville. Is this like a real thing, or?
I haven't seen anything from actual NFL personnel with the Titans talk about this, but it is a big media talking point where just because of Mike Vrabel and Tom Brady's relationship.
Did they really have a good relationship? Like, is that a thing? Because I feel like people kind of fabricate that stuff all the time. Like, oh, yeah, they worked together, so they were, like, best friends. But wasn't it Vrabel who had, like, an issue with Belichick when he got cut? So it's like
he did have an issue with Bill whenever he got traded to Kansas City.
So, and then he kind of stuck it to him in the playoff game with the intentional false start. Like, I get that's just, you know, that's just scheme.
I mean, well, the Patriots and the Titans had a joint practice.
That's true.
Before the season started.
I do remember Vrabel made a joke about Tom, like,
yeah, they kind of went at it in like a playful manner, and they both seemed like they were on good terms. But I mean, the question is,
he's what, 43?
Yeah, he'll be 43 when the season starts.
Okay.
Right now, the Titans don't have any quarterbacks under contract.
Yeah, it seems like Mariota's definitely on his way out.
Yep, which he has handled great. I don't know if you saw some of those NFL
films,
like of him going up and talking to Tannehill. And just like encouraging him throughout the playoffs, just being an exceptional teammate.
Which is everything we've ever heard about Marcus Mariota, right? Like the most graceful teammate of all time when things are good, when things are bad. Like he's just very consistent. At this point, like I don't think there's any way you don't either sign Tannehill to a big contract or franchise tag him. But the Tom Brady thing, I just don't know, man. Like
people want to say, like, Tom threw for over 4,000 yards this year. And I was like, he did, but
in fairness, he did it with also basically nobody at receiver. Like, that was their issue all year. Like, he had Antonio Brown for, what, one game?
Mm-hmm.
And then
Josh Gordon
they had to get rid of Gordon.
Edelman. They traded Demaryius Thomas. I don't know if that was before the season started, but he's pretty much done. But, I mean, the thing for that conversation, I was like, well, Tannehill was definitely on pace to throw for that if he –
If you extrapolate the data, like Tannehill was
better. Oh yeah.
Yeah, he out of nowhere, true. I mean, like, just I everyone was saying, yeah, like bench Mariota, like play for a draft pick, and then Tannehill comes in and is, I mean, the statistics, wasn't he highest rated QBR like in the league or QB rating?
His passer.
Passer rating. I mean, like, it was remarkable the turnaround for the team once he got in. I don't think there's any way the Titans don't re-sign him somehow.
That's the thing. It's like I don't know how much he's going to be asking for. But so you
how much do you think Tom Brady's? I mean, you can't get. There's no way you could do both. Like Brady's going to.
No. You definitely can't do both.
Like Brady's going to demand a ton of cash wherever he goes, and you're only going to have. I mean, he's 43. What are we thinking? Like one, maybe 2 years left for Brady.
It'd probably be a 2-year contract. Yeah, at most.
If Tennessee could sign Brady for 2-year contract and he brought Gronk with him, would you rather have that than to sign Tannehill to like a 4-year deal? Because Tannehill's asking for a 4-year deal, right?
I mean, he should be. He should be.
I've not seen that.
Sure his agent's asking for that.
Yeah.
No, I really don't think so. And that might be my own personal bias. Like, I don't hate Tom Brady. I don't think I want him to be my quarterback. I don't hate Rob Gronkowski. I don't want to become, like, Patriots' leftover NFL team. Like, I feel like Vrabel brings us enough, and Robinson, like, they bring us enough of the Patriot way. I don't need to just steal their retired players and that be, like, the Titans thing now. Like, I'd rather build for the future, and I just don't think I don't think the issue was Ryan Tannehill, and that's why you couldn't beat the Chiefs. Like, the issue wasn't that you didn't have Rob Gronkowski. The issue was Patrick Mahomes is really damn good, and you played a road game after playing two other road games, and you just kind of ran out of gas. I think it's more important for the Titans to lock down Tannehill, lock down Derrick Henry, and then start piecing together. I mean,
they need a pass rusher. They need a dominant pass rusher.
Are there any available like in this
Yannick
draft?
Yannick Ngakoue. Oh, in the draft.
That's like the frustrating thing too. Is like because you had the great playoff run, like you slip even further down the draft this year.
But they'll be. I mean, I think the Titans will be a hot commodity
in the free agent market.
To, when it comes to that, they have I think over like $61 million in cap space that they're able to use. So I was thinking like. There's not exactly a ton of holes they need to fill. Obviously, they need to re-sign Derrick Henry and Ryan Tannehill, and it doesn't look like the NFL is going to have a new collective bargaining agreement or anything of the sort come up this year, which if that doesn't happen, there had been talks about them trying to restructure some things, then the Titans would still be able to have a franchise tag and a transition tag. You could use one on Tannehill and one on Henry if you're not able to come to a deal with them both. If I'm the Titans and I'm with Derrick Henry, running backs, we kind of know how that goes with – it's not something you want to break the bank for, but I think you obviously saw with Derrick Henry, well, he is a difference maker.
He's not your typical running back, right? Like I feel like people say, oh, yeah, running backs, they're a dime a dozen. You can have a running back by committee. And that's true if you've got, you know, three guys that are all 5'11", 6', 200 to 220 pounds, and they all kind of do the same thing. Derrick Henry's a different beast. Like, he is a completely different style of running back, and he's one of those guys that, obviously, if healthy, I think warrants the extra, you know, the extra money, the extra focus on making sure that he's part of your team. That said, I mean, you look at a guy like Todd Gurley, like, that's the cautionary tale for everybody in the NFL. He gets the biggest deal ever for a running back, and arthritic knees. Which is weird that you don't know that, I guess, ahead of time, but you've paid him all this money, and he was, I'm not going to say worthless, but he did not have a good year. He was hurt for most of it. The Rams failed to make the playoffs, and you've got all this money tied up in Todd Gurley, who's not even giving you, like, half of the snaps. So it's tough, and this happens a lot, too. There's only been, like, a couple of guys who can handle this type of workload and then continue it the next year. We saw what happened the big year DeMarco Murray had in Dallas, and then the next year, vroom, just completely fell off. Adrian Peterson, when he was money in Minnesota, was, like, the only guy who, through injury and carrying the ball, you know, 30 times a game, could come back the next year and still be relatively close to what he was the year before. How much does the wear and tear towards the end of the season impact Derrick Henry going into next year? I'm not against giving him a lot of money, but I do think the Titans should probably insulate themselves. You probably should protect yourself with the length of the deal. This is why it's tough for running backs, man. Like, Le'Veon Bell sat out an entire season, left $14 million on the table thinking he was going to get a better deal, and then goes to the Jets. And he got decent money, but he just flat out lost $14 million by not playing, by not showing up in Pittsburgh.
It's I view that a little different because they were going to franchise tag him for the second straight year.
True.
And if you're a running back, like, that's definitely not something you want to see happen on the off chance that you do have an injury, because
then they just
obviously playing for a long-term contract versus 1 year. But Henry did tell ESPN's Diana Russini yesterday that he would definitely like to remain with the Titans as he approaches the free agency period this offseason. So
this feels like two sides that want to be together, right? Yes, it's just a matter of, can you make the money work?
I mean, like, Derrick Henry, he grew up near Jacksonville, Florida, went to college in Alabama, and the Titans, maybe outside of the Falcons, are the closest professional football team to where, like, Tuscaloosa was. I'm just saying, like, in that area, because he still has a lot of fans. There are a lot of Alabama fans that are Tennessee Titans fans.
Well, Nashville is just like the college football, SEC football melting pot. Mm-hmm. I mean, that is what it is. But seems like he enjoys Nashville. He enjoys playing for the Titans. I think the organization really appreciates him and likes him. This is just where it gets tricky, though, right? Because if you're the organization and you've seen what's happened with some other running backs especially, man, you have to protect yourself. You cannot have that much dead money, sitting on your sideline in the way that the Rams did with Todd Gurley and Jared Goff a little bit to on the same vein.
This year was Gurley's fifth season in the league. Next year will be Henry's fifth season in the league.
Yeah, and I guess if you're like trying to like look for a deal, I guess you're just afraid with the amount of carries that he's had over the years. Like, you eventually just get to that point where it's like, I don't know, can he replicate? DeMarco Murray in 2014, like, he had like over 1,800 rushing yards on like almost 400 carries. So that's when the Eagles then signed him to his 5-year, $42 million deal.
And I get it. Like, he had to do that because I think the Cowboys knew, hey, we've kind of run this guy into the ground. There's no way he's going to be able to do that again. The Eagles were willing to give him that money. He went and got it, but he was not the same running back when he got to Philadelphia.
I completely agree with you. I'm trying to think if that was Chip Kelly at the time. I believe it was.
I think it was,
That system just didn't work for DeMarco Murray. And obviously, the Titans traded.
No, that was a weird marriage, like, all the way around.
The Titans traded for DeMarco Murray, and he did a really good job his first year in Tennessee. And then, obviously, like, Henry was DeMarco's backup for a little bit whenever they first brought him in out of college. So, you just want to – if you're going to use a franchise tag, I would rather use a franchise tag on Ryan Tannehill just because if you're unsure he's able to continue to play –
Well, I think you have less data on him. Yeah. Like, at least with Henry, if he's healthy, you kind of know what you're going to get, right? Like, he's a pounder. He's going to break the long one, which I think a lot of people have been surprised by. But, like, his ability to break the 50, 60, 70-yard run with somewhat consistency at his size, like, it doesn't feel like what he does fades away that quickly. And you've seen him do it now for – Billy, you said this will be his fifth season.
Next season will be Henry's fifth
season.
So, again,
more data. With Tannehill, I'm with you. Like, I feel like we've seen this before with quarterbacks. Guys come in, there's no tape on them. They play really, really well. Somebody comes and, like, scoops them up, and then they are never heard from again. Like, I realize Foles got injured in Jacksonville, but they paid him a ton of money, and, like, even when he was healthy, he really wasn't that good. I mean, I don't blame him for going and getting the money, but I just with such a little sample size on Tannehill, as great as it was, I'm with you. I think you franchise tag him, make him prove it one more year, and then, you know, assuming things go well next year for the Titans and Tannehill, then you maybe look at a 3-4 year deal worth tons of money. But what did Kirk Cousins get to go to Minnesota?
It's 3 years, like $88 million.
Like, you can't do that if you're the Titans. Like, you not now. I mean, there was a lot. I mean, Kirk Cousins has been okay, but, I mean, we've seen him in the playoffs and in primetime games. Like, he's just not good. I'd need more data on Tannehill if I'm a Titans GM, if I'm a Titans front office executive, to decide how much, how long. I feel like you want him to play a whole season before you commit, you know, the pot to Ryan Tannehill as your starting quarterback for the next 3, 4, 5 years.
Real quick, another news as it relates to the Titans. Defensive coordinator Dean Pease has retired.
Was that expected? That felt really weird.
No, it was. I expected it. He retired with Baltimore 2 years ago, and then Mike Vrabel like convinced him to come out of coaching or to come out of retirement to coach.
Kind
of
like what McVay did with Phillips. Just like, hey, you want to help out? I've already told everyone you're coming. So
I don't know if it was to that extent, but Mike and Dean had a really good relationship, and Dean's like, yeah, I'll come help you out because I wanted to see him succeed. And so, but I thought Kerry Coombs, maybe it's pronounced Combs, I'm not sure, but the defensive backs coach for the Titans, I thought there was a good chance if Pease retired that they would promote him to defensive coordinator, but Ohio State offered Kerry the defensive coordinator role, and so he is going to be with the Buckeyes next season.
So now Titans looking for some defensive coaches all across the board.
I wouldn't be surprised to see them promote from within. I don't know exactly who they would go with, but I mean, you saw them do that with Arthur Smith last year after Matt LaFleur took the head coaching job in Green Bay.
And it was a shaky start, but Arthur Smith, I think, ended up proving he knows what he's doing, especially once you got Tannehill in.
He had a great first game against Cleveland, but again, like, Cleveland paper tiger for sure.
Yeah.
And then, it was just kind of a struggle with Mariota, but then once Tannehill got in there, you saw Arthur Smith actually knows what he's doing.
Are you in on Vrabel? I think I might be in on Vrabel. I know early in the season I think I like the guy.
There was a point where I even said I was out, and Vrabel actually even addressed the matter. He's like, we weren't a good football team, and I was definitely not a good football coach. Like, he realized, like, the mistakes he were making, and you got to see him turn it around and start doing, I guess, just, like, quality decisions when it came to time management.
Well, even just like understanding situational football, right? Yeah. Like, we talked about it a little bit, the Belichick punking, you know, when he's milking the clock with penalties, like stuff like that. I'm sure a lot of coaches know that, but maybe are a little bit afraid to do it. They don't think outside the box, even though they're aware of possibilities like that. Like, I thought that was a pretty good move by Vrabel. Seems like his players really like him. So,
oh, yeah, he's definitely a player's coach. They love him. Like, he's out there doing push-ups with them before the games.
Planking, too, yeah. Got to get the core nice and wearing shorts out on the field in Kansas City. He's a dude.
Running through the drills with them.
He's a guy being – yeah, I really like that. Like, he's out there. The guys are in full pads, and he's just, like, basically playing, you know, defensive line, offensive line, helping them go through the drills. I think Vrabel might end up being a good one. He also seems like a pretty good, like, personality fit for the Titans as an organization. Like, I don't know if he did it on purpose, but, like, he's got, like, the Nashville high and tight haircut, the mustache. Like, he – I don't know. Like, his personality seems to fit. That's not always the case in the NFL, and sometimes I think it actually does matter. But no, I think I'm in on Vrabel. I think he had a really good year. I'm really interested to see what Robinson, Vrabel, the Titans do in the draft and then in free agency.
Oh, this offseason, like, I mean.
Because you said it feels like you've got a lot of really good pieces in certain spots, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you saw a lot of young players really step up this year, especially in the playoffs. Like, Evans is going to be a monster. Simmons is going to be a monster. Obviously, A.J. Brown, like what he did once Tannehill took over has been sensational.
I will say, like, they're set up at wide receiver. A lot of people, like A.J. Brown, like you just mentioned, he came on. He did great. Like, he's going to win Offensive Rookie of the Year. I think Nick Bosa will probably just get Rookie of the Year, but there's still a chance. Like, A.J. gets it. But, like, a lot of people, obviously Corey Davis, he was the fifth overall pick. He's not exactly shown what a lot of people were hoping. But for the Titans, as much as they like to run, he's one of the better blocking wide receivers in the league.
No, and that's why it works. And, I mean, he's made a couple of really big catches. Yeah. Was it the overtime catch against Philly last year?
Yeah,
in the end zone, like the one hand. Yeah, like he's just kind of your big body, good downfield blocking, sure-handed big receiver, right? But now you've got A.J. Brown on the other side who is electric. Shifty, like he's. Yeah. I think it's a good 1-2 combo with those two guys.
And the Titans really like using the tight ends, and as you saw with Jonnu Smith, they like to get him the ball and try to get him out.
He
in space
was surprised,
and he's super fast.
A surprise. Like, he kind of. Was he not at Cleveland?
No,
I was thinking. I'm thinking of David Njoku. That's what I was thinking of at Cleveland.
But Jonnu Smith went to FIU. He was the player. I don't know if you remember this, but his girlfriend poured boiling water on his head when he was sleeping. And he had like some pretty bad burns.
That was Jonnu Smith. Really?
Yeah.
I remember that story. I did not remember that it was Jonnu Smith.
Yep. And so the Titans kind of drafted him, hoping he could be like a Delanie Walker type player, and he's starting to develop into that. And Delanie still has another year on his contract, but based off cap space, I expect to see him get cut. Unfortunately, I liked him, but he's just been battling too many injuries.
Yeah,
he's up there.
I was gonna say he's getting older. That's, so what are you gonna do?
But yeah, if you re-sign Jack Conklin, their right tackle, they're going to have to do something there. But for outside of Tannehill and Henry, like their offense, they have the pieces in place. Definitely need to make some moves on the defensive side of the ball for getting a better pass rush. But, man, they're set to make another playoff run next year.
Oh, yeah, I would say so. Assuming Tannehill isn't the one-hit wonder that, you know, we've seen other quarterbacks be in the NFL. But it seems like, again, with the pieces around him, you would think the offensive line, Conklin's a big, that's like a big target, right? Like, how can they make that work? But if they bring back what they've got, add a couple pieces defensively, like you said, like a edge rusher. I love him to death. I'm still not sold on Adoree. Like, I think another corner would probably be a good move.
Yeah.
I think you feel really good at safety with Byard and Ryan. But, yeah, like
Vaccaro.
But it's.
They say Logan Ryan might get cut.
Really?
I don't think they should. I mean, I think he's like one of the better receivers when it comes to covering the slot, or corners when it comes to covering the slot receiver. And Malcolm Butler played better towards the second half. Well, the second
like
half
was,
of last year and then the
yeah,
first half
he was
of
getting
year.
Cooked at the first half of last year.
So he's coming back from a broken arm. We'll see.
I mean, they were one game away from the Super Bowl. It feels like they're not far off, right? Like, they just need maybe one more explosive playmaker on offense and then edge rushers. Like, you've got to, if you're going to send three against Mahomes all game, you better have a couple of guys who can get off a double team and press the edge.
And I didn't mention him, but Adam Humphries did a really good job of being a safety blanket in third down situations.
He did. Like, he was a good surprise. Like, one of those third down, you know, slot guys just get open, get to the sticks, and move the chains. Well, I guess we'll see what they do coming up soon. It feels like a lot of these decisions probably not going to wait too long, especially with as many moves as they have to make still. Now we're up against the break. I do want to shift back to basketball. Obviously, the Big 12 SEC Challenge this weekend. We talked about the suspensions for Kansas. We'll go over those again for those of you who have joined us a little bit later. Also tonight, I don't know if you guys might have forgotten, but the Lady Vols travel to Hartford, Connecticut, to take on the Huskies for the first time since 2007. Has it been that long? Was it 2007? Yikes.
When was the last time you went up there?
2006. I was up there in 2006. We won. Parker had a dunk. It was pretty good. I almost got fired. True story. 3 and Out rolls on the Truly Hard Seltzer Studios of Fan Run Radio. Houston, Davey, Billy with you this morning, turning our attention to the Big 12 SEC Challenge this weekend. The teams not participating in the challenge are Ole Miss, Georgia, Vandy, and South Carolina. All other SEC teams. Is this an even split typically? Do they do six home, six away?
Yeah.
Okay. That's good. All other SEC teams obviously taking on Big 12 members. I realize that they make this decision based kind of on how you finish the previous year. Mm-hmm. So why is Auburn playing Iowa State? Auburn goes to the Final Four. Tennessee does not, loses all their players, and we get a rematch with Kansas at Kansas. Feels like maybe we got the shaft. Because was Auburn not... Did they? I think they were out of this the last 2 years. They did not participate. Tennessee played Iowa State. Was it 2 years ago? And then last year, obviously, got West Virginia. We played Kansas State. And I thought there was one more.
Played Iowa State. If you
2 years
that,
ago,
sorry.
Right? Yeah, two years ago.
Yeah, and you played Kansas State twice.
Okay, that's what it was. We played Kansas State twice, which seems weird.
Kansas State twice and then TCU. Iowa State and West Virginia.
Kentucky, Texas Tech. I think that one, I'm fine with that one. That one makes a lot of sense.
They were both second last year. I thought that's how it went. Like, so, because West Virginia had a terrible year last year.
Yes, they were bad.
And so, like, that's why they're playing Missouri. So, Auburn was fourth last year in the SEC. So, I think Iowa State was probably fourth in the Big 12.
Who won the Big 12 last year? Because I know Kansas did not, and it was like the first time in a long time.
It was.
Did Iowa State not beat Kansas in the Big 12 tournament? Am I misremembering that?
It's a good question. Why can I not? I'm drawing a blank, too. I'm trying to.
I know last year was the first year in, what, like 13 straight that they
Iowa State won.
They won the tournament, right? Okay.
State finished fifth last year.
In the Big 12?
Yeah.
And Auburn was fourth in the SEC?
Yeah.
I guess it really doesn't matter. I mean, I'm sure these decisions are made based more than just on who's going to be really good and who's not. But I don't know. It seems like we played Kansas last year. Like, maybe give us somebody else. Like, Texas.
Kansas finished third. So, Davey's on it.
Oh, yeah. And
were we third?
Well, we were third, but Kansas State is not playing in the tournament, so that bumps everybody down a notch.
Gotcha.
No, they are. They're playing Alabama.
Yeah, they got Alabama.
So that's a weird one.
Yeah, I don't know how they...
Seems odd.
That throws it off. I don't know if it's something to not playing a similar team that you've played in the last couple of years. Like
Then why did we play Kansas State twice? We played them twice in 3 years, right? Wasn't it like Kansas State, TCU, Kansas State again?
Unless they didn't like that, so then they put in a rule to where it's like, all right, if they've played in a certain amount of time...
Yeah.
They're going to switch it up.
I'm not sure. 4 p.m. tip in Lawrence, Kansas, Fog Allen Fieldhouse. According to the BPI, Tennessee has a 9.5% chance of victory. I do believe, if I'm not mistaken, that's gone in Tennessee's direction. direction. I think it was
0.5%.
Yeah, it was like 91.7 or 92.2 yesterday. So the suspension's really, really making an impact for Tennessee's chances to knock off the number three Jayhawks. Baylor goes to Florida. Baylor now your new number one team in the country. You in on Baylor? You don't like it?
No. Baylor's going to win that game. I'm thinking, are the Jayhawks, are their guards pretty quick?
I have not watched them
That's
play.
That's the thing. I saw
you
them early.
You watched them play against Duke,
early,
right?
Yeah.
Who, Kansas?
But like,
yeah.
I want to.
Yeah, Dotson, there's no one that's going to be able to check him.
I get that. Like, the thing, though, I try to throw out that Kansas-Duke game earlier in the year because Kansas had like 29 turnovers. Like, they just couldn't hold on to the ball.
I remember
ball.
That, yeah. Didn't Duke have a lot, too? I feel like that was a really sloppy game.
It was.
Yeah.
So I just, like, I kind of. It's a little bit of an outlier as far as looking at that game and trying to project how they're going to match up against them.
What's the expectation for you guys in this game? Like, don't get embarrassed. Like, maybe make a run. Like
I don't really care. I don't. I care, but if Tennessee gets beat by 30, like, it doesn't change my.
So
opinion
you're saying
about
I just
want
to see them show up.
Everything
like,
to gain, nothing to lose.
Game again, like where you're down from the beginning, and it's just like there's no point in watching. Or Georgia, like. I don't know if I've ever just turned off a game at halftime for the Vols and just not gone back and watched like any of the second half.
Georgia did that to you this year?
I was just like, there's nothing that's going to happen.
I think
game.
I turned
and
the Wisconsin
just,
game off early.
I was like, you know what? I'm going to the gym. I'm out. And I just left.
Obviously this game like presents a really big opportunity for a team that's trying to fight their way back onto the bubble. You know, we talked yesterday, like if the suspensions had been, you know, maybe a little bit stiffer, and you were to go in there and win, does the committee say, but Kansas didn't have their guys, we're not going to credit Tennessee? Now if you win, at least you're going to get full credit, right? Like, if you win this game?
Yeah, it's like they're guys who are, like, I think 7th and 9th in minutes are out.
Yeah.
So, like, yeah, that's – yeah. Tennessee, I know Vanderbilt, Ole Miss haven't been good. But you've at least seen the Vols put together two – I'll say the last three.
I was gonna
halves
say three halves of basketball have been good.
Have been good. So it's like I want to see them at least come out. I know they're on the road, but just show me you have a pulse. And even if this game just goes to bleep, you're at least able to make a run to at least get in the NIT. If not the NCAA tournament,
surely to God we're an NIT team, right? Like that. This is your zone. Like you're the NIT bracketologist of the show. Like we're 12-6. I mean, I feel like, 500?
Well,
above
like they
500
should,
gets you?
But, I mean, we've played two of the worst teams in the SEC, and we've looked good. I just, like, I've not had anybody to kind of grade them against going forward for, like, what you're going to see for the second half of the SEC schedule, you know?
No, that's fair. I mean, obviously, the schedule only gets more difficult the rest of the way. Like, we hit this stretch kind of at a good time as you're introducing Plavsic, and you're still trying to get Vescovi ready. I do want to talk about, like, the Vescovi skid since his debut and like how we can mitigate that, because he's progressively gotten a little bit less impactful every single game. But as I look at this game against Kansas, I'm kind of with you guys. Like I don't want to say it's a throwaway, like it's an opportunity, but if you go up there and they look like Kansas, I'm not going to be too frustrated. I can't decide if we're over hyping like the downfall of the SEC, or if maybe the league is actually pretty good. I'm interested to learn a little more about the league this weekend as we see everybody, you know, save, what is it, Georgia, Ole Miss, and Vanderbilt, South Carolina. Like, now that you're going against outside conference opponents, like, I'm interested to see, like, how does this shake down on Saturday?
Maybe I am a little bit biased because I do watch more SEC basketball than any
biased
other conference.
Against the SEC?
No, I think the SEC is better than people are giving it credit for.
See, I'm starting to lean that way.
I think there's a lot of like decent teams. I don't think any team in this league's elite. I don't, you know, 1, 2, 3 seeds. I don't think so. But I think there's a lot of teams that can make some noise come March as 5, 6, 7, 8 seats.
It feels like this league is very new this year, if that makes sense. Like, you know, last year Tennessee obviously returned the bulk of their roster. Kentucky was super talented. They had a couple guys return that were really, really good. But you look at it this year, like LSU lost everybody but Javonta Smart. Kentucky has pretty much...
They have Mays back.
Well, Did he start last year?
Mm-hmm.
He did? Okay. So they got two guys back, but I feel like they still lost four. Didn't they lose a guy off the bench that went to the NBA? They entered into the draft?
Auburn lost four of their top six players.
Right. Florida is a fairly new team. Obviously, they've added Blackshear. They're playing Glover a lot. Like, they don't look like the same team. I will admit to not following Florida that closely last year. Bama, new coach. Right? I mean, we know who John Petty is, but like, they've got a new coach and things look a little bit different. I feel like Arkansas has been kind of steadily building a pretty decent roster for a while, but that's a new coach there in Musselman. Like, it just feels like we don't have a good, at least for myself, I don't have a good pulse on any individual team because I don't have a lot of previous data on a lot of players. Like, the coaches, yeah, sure. Like, you know, Ben Howland's a good coach, you know, Frank Martin's a good coach. It's Mississippi State and South Carolina, so I'm like, well, how good are they really? I don't know. Texas A&M, I thought they were pretty bad. I mean, they're 3-3 in conference. Like, they're not terrible. You know, Missouri's not going to be great. We knew that going into this year based on what they lost last year. Vanderbilt, new coach. Like, this feels like just a new league, and in a year that seems so open in college basketball, I just wonder if, because we're not as strong at the top as we were last year, people like myself are saying, oh, yeah, the SEC's just down. It's awful.
To kind of put it in perspective right now for where Lenardi has conferences and bracketology, Big Ten by far the best. He's got 11 Big Ten teams in.
Like, that's wild to me. And they're all beating the hell out of each other. Like, they're cannibalizing themselves. Like, and Ohio State, there was a stretch there where I was like, Ohio State might be the best team in the country. Then they lost four straight.
The Big East has six teams in.
Big East is good.
And then you have a four-way tie of conferences with five teams in each. And that's the SEC, the Pac-12, the Big 12, and the ACC.
The ACC only has five right now?
Yeah, it's a rough year for them.
And how many? You said the Big 12's five also?
Yes.
I think we're going to learn a little bit about the SEC this weekend.
First four out, Minnesota, Alabama, DePaul, and Virginia.
Wow, Bama's on the bubble?
Yeah.
That went over Auburn's going to carry a little bit of weight, I guess, huh?
I'm telling, they can score the basketball. They're a scary team. Davey's talking about the seeds. LSU's a 7 seed right now. That would scare me to death if I was a 2 seed.
I feel like LSU's better than a 7.
They win a lot of close games, and maybe that's what's holding them back.
No, they
bit.
Do. That's what I think it was Mays who said. It's like, yeah, we got up by 10 and had to keep it close because that's what we do is win close games.
I mean, Kentucky has a 5 seed. Yeah, they can get beat by South Carolina, but if you're telling me Kentucky can't beat Kansas, like, I'll take that bet every day because they can get hot and they can beat anyone in the nation.
Washington's first up on the next four out as far as opponents that have beat or the Vols have beaten.
They're on the bubble as first four out?
Yeah, and then Florida State's in. They have a win over us. I don't see VCU's one of the last four in since he has the win there. Memphis is currently in as a 7 seed, yeah, but again,
they'll drop after last night.
That game.
I mean, I could not believe that score. I mean, I get it, like, you know, conference road games, whatever. To get doubled up by Tulsa, that is like, I what's your excuse there if you're Penny? Like, it's one thing to lose, it's one thing to get beat by, you know, 15, 16, 20, whatever. Like, to get doubled up with that roster. That does not make any sense. That's what I'm saying. Like, I mean, I've watched Memphis in a couple games and thought, hey, that's a pretty good team. Like, they're good. Did Georgia beat Memphis right
yes.
before we played
yes,
them? They
I
beat them
so.
By like two or something. I mean, I think Georgia's a pretty good team.
They are not in as of right now.
Georgia? No, they won't be. Not yet.
And I don't. They're not even on the bubble.
I think they had a couple of bad losses early. They look like they're just getting better and better as the season rolls on.
I don't see Cincinnati on here. Wisconsin's a 6 seed.
Wisconsin's a 6?
Yeah, VCU's a 12. They'll be in one of the play-in games as of right now.
Yeah. Well, tell you what, let's take a quick break and look at the schedule because what's the magic number? 20-ish? 21?
I think
maybe 19.
I don't know.
Iffy.
I think
19 win a game in
that's
the SEC tournament.
It depends on like.
I think
how
the mid majors are too strong this year. I think you have to get to 20 in the regular season.
Well, you're not wrong, but I also think that the conference tournaments, like, there's going to be I would say probably two or three teams win their way into the NCAA tournament that were not expected, just because that's just been the nature of college basketball this year. Like, there's going to be teams that have no business being in the tournament, then they're going to win their conference tournament and knock some teams off the bubble. Like, that's honestly, that's probably my biggest hope for Tennessee at this point, is that you somehow win the SEC tournament and steal a spot in the big dance. But I do want to look at the schedule, because they're at 12-6 now. You've got the opportunities. Like, you're going to have the marquee games, especially down the stretch, to really improve the resume. But what's the number, right? Like, what's the magic number? And then, depending on SEC seeding, like, and your draw in the SEC tournament, like, can you get one? Can you get two in that thing? And then, obviously, if you win the whole thing, you're in. But we'll take a look at Tennessee's schedule, talk a little bit more about this Kansas game this weekend. I don't know. Maybe I'm just being really optimistic. I think Tennessee can... I think they have a run in them to get on the bubble and maybe make a push for March Madness. We'll be back after this. Final segment, hour two, three and out in the Truly Hard Seltzer studios of Fan Run Radio. We're going to do it, boys. We're going to create the path. We're going to map it out for Tennessee to sneak onto the bubble and into the NCAA tournament. Save just winning the SEC tournament, because apparently we don't ever do that, even when we have the best team in the country. Okay, Kansas. I think we all agree, probably not a very winnable game. But then you come back home against Texas A&M. Was that a bird call? You couldn't have done that during the break? What are you doing? Okay, it's fine. It's good. I think you actually just loosened it or something. You probably stripped the bolt. Well done.
It's working fine.
Mm-hmm. Well done. Texas A&M, they're bad. They're better maybe than we thought going into conference play, but that should be a win, right? We feel good about that? At Mississippi State?
Yeah.
Okay, you're shaking no, but like, give me like percentages. Like, somehow we do play well at 40%. Mississippi State, and I feel like we've had Mississippi State's number recently. I don't know if that's a Barnes versus Howland thing, but we have played well enough against Mississippi State. I still think, is that guy that Admiral postered in the SEC tournament last year, is he back? Because he's going to RIP. He's definitely going to have PTSD if he's back. Like, you don't forget something like that. So, Bill, you think we can beat Texas A&M, right?
I do.
Mississippi State, maybe?
I think you can beat Mississippi State. I just think they're better than advertised as well.
I'm going to go and call Mississippi State a win, just because
I'll say 40%.
We play, I don't know why, but we play well when we play Mississippi State. At Alabama, I'm out. There's no chance.
That's your second road game back to back. I don't think you beat Alabama.
And Brent, you don't think anything is going to sway you from being like, all right, we're going to go on the road and get one.
We got time. We got a couple weeks. I mean, I could change my mind. I'm just saying, as it sits right now, Brandon, I thought, made a really good point. Like, Tennessee, when we play at Georgia, we never play well. We always get beat. And when we play at Alabama, we always play like junk and get beat. Even really good Bruce Pearl teams and not good Alabama teams, we go down there and get housed. I don't know what it is. It's a house of horrors for Tennessee when we play on the road at Alabama. Then you come back and you welcome Kentucky. January 8th, 1 o'clock, CBS, Thompson Bowling Arena, sellout. I feel like if you're going to split with Kentucky, you got to win that one. How good do we think Kentucky is as far as the rest of the conference? Are they more like an Alabama, more like a Mississippi State, or are they... I can't figure Kentucky out either.
I got a question for you. What do you think for the Tennessee-Kentucky game on February the 8th, the BPI predictor is?
I would say Kentucky like 67%.
Tennessee 56.2%.
Favored? Can someone explain that? How?
I can't.
How? I mean, I don't think this is like a great Kentucky team, but I don't remember the last time, like, even when Tennessee's been really, really good, it seems like we're always underdogs against Kentucky. It's like history.
Is the last time Kentucky beat Tennessee?
They haven't beat
in Thompson. It would have been 2016.
Yeah, it was like Barnes's first year.
I remember,
because I think last year was three straight at home over Kentucky. So maybe they're going with a little bit of history.
They had like the number one team in the country, and they they packed out Thompson Bowling. It was awful. Like I that was the first time I'd ever been in that arena where I was just like, there's more Kentucky fans than Tennessee fans.
That won't happen again for a long time, though.
2015.
15? You've beat them. So 16, 17,
okay.
8. Yeah, I think, I think you've, right, you've won every home matchup again. Well, wasn't there a weird year in there where you only played them once?
2014.
So ever since 2014, we have played them twice a year and won at home every time? Say 15?
2015, you only played them once as well.
Okay. I know that was like a big point of contention. Everyone blamed Konzo for that. I don't know if
you
it was true or not.
Twice in 2016, twice in 17, three times in 18, and three times in 19.
You swept them in 18, right?
They beat you in the SEC tournament.
That's right. That was
championship
yeah,
game.
Yeah. That was the year Lamonte hit the dagger there. And then we got Shea Gilgeous-Alexandered all over the place in the SEC Tournament Championship.
Yep.
Yikes. So we're favored over Kentucky at home, according to the BPI. Okay. Well, if that's the case, I'm calling it a win. Then Arkansas. Arkansas is just one of those teams. They always seem to have our number. Maybe I'm crazy. And then you got to go to Arkansas in late February. Can you split Arkansas, Billy? Can you split it?
That's more likely than beating Kentucky, in my opinion.
The matchup predictor has Mississippi State as a 78% favorite when you go to Starkville.
I'm telling you, State's pretty good. They protect the rim better than just about any team in the country. That Perry guy's incredible.
Okay, so here we sit, lost to Kansas, split A&M, Mississippi State, split Kentucky, Alabama, split Arkansas, South Carolina. I feel like South Carolina on the road is tough, but again, split those. So that's three more. So now we're at 15. You get Vandy, there's 16, at Auburn. Does this year's Auburn team not match up with us a little bit better than their teams recently? Like, I know they're good inside, but I don't feel like they are elite inside, and they don't have – I mean, they beat us the last three times by hitting, what, like 23s? Mm-hmm. Was it the championship game last year? Did they hit 17 threes or 18? And I feel like that's exactly what they did late in the season when they beat us at Auburn.
They hit 15 in the championship game, 13 at Auburn.
15 threes. Like, this Auburn team is not going to hit – well, I'm going to say that. They're not the same team that they were last year. Like, they're capable, certainly, but that's not their style. They are an inside team for the most part this year.
The BPI, I just kind of went through and looked at them all, has Tennessee winning every home game, or at least favored in every home game,
okay,
except Florida. But Florida is favored by 50.6%.
So
it's a toss-up.
It's still a coin flip.
Auburn's only hit over 15 threes once this season.
Against who?
Cal State Northridge.
I mean, if you win all your home games, that's six.
Like, it even has you beating Auburn at home.
I'm starting to feel a little bit better about this. I mean,
do you think they're taking into account, like, how well the Vols have played inside Thompson Bowling the last couple of years? Because, I mean, obviously we had the 30-plus game home stretch.
I mean, obviously, like, there is a home court issue here. Like, you do get some, I don't know how they weighed it for the BPI, but then I remember the Wisconsin game and we played like absolute junk. But if you win all your home games, that's 18. So then you're talking a win or two in the SEC tournament and you're at 20. Does 20 wins after the SEC tournament get you in?
I'm going to say no. I'm going to say you need 21, 22 after conference play or after the tournament.
Right now, I feel like I agree with you. It's one of those things. I just don't know how a lot of these other teams are going to fare out that are on the bubble. And it's just anyone's guess at this point.
And that's what makes this year particularly tough when you're talking about the bubble, because it just feels like college basketball is a big melting pot of teams that could be really – like, I've seen that more this year of teams, like, look average but have really high ceilings. Mm-hmm. And I feel like Tennessee's kind of been – I don't think we have as high of a ceiling, but I feel like we have been somewhat more consistent, save – the Georgia and Wisconsin games. Like, we've kind of played our game, so to speak, or at least brought other teams down to our level with the exception of those two. Like, you haven't been just absolutely embarrassed with the exception of those two. And even in those games, like, I think you had an early lead on Wisconsin. You were up in the first 10 minutes on Georgia, and then Georgia starts banging home all those threes. Same thing for Wisconsin. They hadn't shot over, what, like 50% in a game in like 2 years, and then they couldn't miss in the second half. So then 18. Your road games remaining: Mississippi State, Alabama, South Carolina, Auburn, Arkansas, Kentucky. Feels like you're probably not going to win out at home, and the road wins are going to be really tough to come by. SEC tournament in Nashville, though?
Correct. Big Blue Nation.
Stop.
They call it Catville.
Oh, okay.
And they call Atlanta Catlana. Like, I mean, they just have all these dumb names.
They make shirts.
Take over.
They just put cats in front of everything. Yeah. It works. It's the shtick.
Like, if they were to come here, yeah, like, it'd be just another Catville in their opinion, even though they've gotten beat here the last 3 years.
Catville. I'm going to have the Vescovi conversation to kick off hour three. Does that sound good? Back after this.
You're listening to Three and Out.